Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius from Kent State University, and this week on Counselor Audio Source, contributing editor Dr. Laura Bruneau speaks with Dr. Andrew Burke, both of Adams State College, about substance use assessment.
Welcome to Counselor Audio Source. My name's Laura Bruneau, and I'm going to be talking to Dr. Andrew Burke of Adams State College about using assessment when working with persons with substance abuse. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
I guess the start off is I'm wondering, because I know you have a lot of experience with assessment, and then particularly in terms of substance abuse. So I'm curious, in your opinion, why is assessment so important when you're working with clients who have substance use issues?
Well, I think the use of assessment is extremely important with this population. And I've noticed this, I'm aware of this during my various experiences as a counselor. One of the things I've noticed is sometimes when you're trying to work with clients, there's lots of various issues that are occurring at a time. And so sometimes one of the ways to help kind of focus the client is by using these instruments, and that will help identify very important information that or areas of concern. And we're talking about assessment for substance abuse, but you could also use that for mental health issues too. Mm-hmm.
So if somebody came in and they were saying they were depressed, you could use something like the Beck Depression Inventory to get maybe more of an objective measure?
Yes. This is kind of off topic, but the Beck Depression Inventory is a very concrete instrument. It's based off of very basics of the DSM, so you could use that. And what's nice about having in the DSM very very strong characteristics is that there are some very good assessment instruments for substance abuse that can address common themes that occur throughout people who use substances.
Okay. Well, and I guess the other thing I think about is that when I was working with clients, let's say they did drink in excess to the norm, whatever you want to call that, maybe they would use occasionally, they might not necessarily disclose that because they don't think that that's an issue. But that type of information might come out through the use of an assessment.
And that's true, especially with the high rate of people with dual diagnosis or co-occurring disorders. Mm-hmm. It's extremely important because if you want to try to treat one disorder, you have to understand the full spectrum. And if you just think it's depression and you don't understand that the person drinks, 12 beers a day, it's going to have a really major impact. So you have to have that full knowledge. And the instruments can help you do that.
So assessment in general is important because you need to gain the necessary knowledge. And then especially when there's such a huge occurrence of co-occurring disorders, it's important to see how maybe the two of them might be related to each other.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
Okay. So tell me about some different ways to assess for substance use.
Well, there's various ways, and we don't have the time to cover them all, but there's a couple. And I think people, when they hear the word assessment, we always kind of assume it's a paper and pencil type of method. But a lot of places, and a lot of places I worked at, we didn't actually use a paper and pencil as much as doing interviewing and talking with people and using basic interviewing skills to get information, asking them how often they drink, do they drink when they wake up, how many drinks is it, how frequent do you drink, what kind of consequences do you have when you drink, and some of those very basic questions can start to lead you into, okay, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm. So a lot of that could be just part of the standardized first session protocol, an intake interview, whatever you want to call it.
Exactly, yeah, and a lot of the places do that, and they ask you how much, how often, when the last time you used. Mm-hmm. And that's really extremely important. Obviously, the use of the DSM is also extremely important because the DSM gives us really structured categories for what is abuse and what is dependence. And so you could use that with the interviewing skill, with the interviews, to determine, okay, where is this person at? Mm-hmm. with their use. Is it a problem for them? If not, or if it is, then how do you should deal with it?
So, for example, if somebody uses alcohol, you could ask them questions about withdrawal symptoms to figure out whether or not there might be a difference between abuse or dependence, those type, sort of things.
Yes, very much so. Yes.
All right, so the DSM gives us a good guide in terms of where to put somebody in terms of what they report.
Yes, and if you know that, if you know you understand the DSM quality categories before you go in there, you can use questions based on that to ask people about their different issues.
Okay.
Withdrawal symptoms, dependency, frequency drinking. Does somebody drink or do they spend a lot of time engaging in activities to get the substance?
Mm-hmm.
And those are really important questions.
How do their family perceive drinking? Have they got into legal trouble? All of those types of things.
Yes,
yeah.
very much.
Okay. So far we've talked about kind of the interviewing process and also including the information from the DSM. Are there any specific assessment tools that you could use?
Well, there's tons of assessment tools. And the one that is probably the easiest is the CAGE.
Okay.
And the CAGE is basically a set of four questions you ask the person. And the questions are, have you ever felt like you ought to cut down on your drinking? Have people annoyed you or criticized you about your drinking? Have you ever felt bad about the quality about your drinking? Have you ever had a drink first thing in the morning to steady yourself or to get rid of a hangover? And if somebody answers two or three of those, you have to at least suspect at least an alcohol abuse. And that's the one thing about the CAGE is that it's meant for alcohol abuse. It's not meant for other substances.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that is one of the things. So you could use this for other substances, but you'd have to change those questions. Research says it works. Obviously, there are some concerns about the use of the CAGE because people lie. And there's no way to determine if somebody lies or not. So that would be one of the things that you have to be very aware of if you use that. But, you know, if you have 15 minutes to talk with somebody, those are four very easy questions you can do and you can get some good information to start out with.
I know at an agency I worked at, they use for the adolescents the CRAFT. There were six questions modeled after, I think one of the first ones, have you ever ridden in a car with somebody who was under the influence or you've driven, you know, more, targeting more adolescent type behaviors and those types of things. So, I mean, those are really good just to kind of put within a standardized interview process to see what happens, to see if there are any red flags, but maybe you don't know if the person is necessarily telling the truth.
Yeah, and that's a really big issue with this population. The awareness of their substance abuse and the awareness to express that to somebody they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to think, okay, well, where is this? Is this something that they may be truthful or not truthful about? So sometimes what helps is using other instruments, more the standardized, what we think of when we say the term assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Those may be more helpful at that point.
Well, I know you wanted to talk about one in particular, the SASE, I believe.
Yeah, you know, and I'm a big fan of the SASE. It's a little bit different than, I think, the MAST, the CAGE, some of the MACAR scales on the MMPI, just because the SASE was developed to measure substance dependence. And it's both alcohol and other drugs. So it's nice because it allows you to use this for any type of substance, and it allows you to determine, is this a problem to such a point that people are having severe difficulties, which I think is unique because most of the instruments just say, does somebody use this too much that it's causing them problems? This is taking the next step.
Mm-hmm. So the next step, again, is really figuring out what those problems are? Is that it, or, I'm sorry, could you explain that again?
What I'm talking about, the next step is there's abuse and then you have dependence. And
okay.
The next step is dependence. That's more of a chronological issue. I worked in a crisis setting. We had children and we had adults, but even the adults would come in, they were having a chronic history of some type of substance abuse.
Okay.
So using the SASE, we can know that they're having this chronic issue with substance abuse, which was important for us because, you know, at the same time they're also having, you know, major depressive disorder, psychosis, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. So really it helped us to understand, or could have helped us understand, okay, not only did they have DSM, like major depressive disorder, but they have a long history of using some type of substance that, you know, has an effect on the body.
So the SASE is different because it could probably give you more indication of whether or not there might be the dependence, whether or not there's something chronic happening.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Okay.
And what's nice about the SASE is that it's two-sided. It's 67 questions, true and false on the one side. And then there's on the other side, there's two columns. One set of columns asks about alcohol use, and the very direct questions about alcohol use, and then other drug use. So, and based on the scoring on both sides, you can understand, is the person having dependence on alcohol, drugs of some sort, or a combination of both, which I think is really unique in the field of assessment.
Okay. So I think in terms of, because I've seen some of the readouts of a SASE, and I think that there's lots of different types of scales. Like I know there's a face valid alcohol, a face valid drugs. I think that just tells you whether or not there might be more of an issue with alcohol versus other drugs. What are some of the other scales that it measures? What are some other unique things that you can find out from the SASE that you can't get from other assessments?
Well, there's tons. There's the symptom scale, which measures symptoms of use. There's the OAT and the SAT, which measures obvious traits of substance dependence or to substance use. And the SAT measures traits that are not as obvious to you and I or the common person that talks about substance dependence. There's a defensiveness scale, so we can determine, you know, how honest somebody is when they're taking this. There's an interesting scale called the SAM, and what the SAM measures is the person being defensive because they're using some type of substance, or the defensive because they are just defensive in their normal behavior, which is quite interesting because then anyway we can determine where is that defensiveness coming from.
Sure.
There's the family scale, the FAM scale, which measures how you relate to others. Mm-hmm. Are you more concerned about what other people are thinking? There's the random answering pattern, the RAP, and that just measures what you think that measures. And there's a correctional scale, which I've always been fascinated with, is does somebody have similar qualities to individuals who have engaged in criminal behavior?
Okay. So then, this SASE, I know there's one for adolescents and one for adults, and I know we're talking about the adult version. So this is measuring a person's answers against the general population, or is this about the population of substance users?
That's a good question. For the first two scales, that measure, the direct measures, the direct alcohol measures, and the direct drug measures, those are direct. They actually have by scale how many, it's based on a point system,
okay,
how many points you have. The rest of the scales are developed by the Criterion Keyed method, so that people that have had higher scores will answer in a certain manner than others. So half the instrument is just, this is why they call it face valid, it's because you basically say, I'm telling you this is my problem.
I see. Okay.
Well, the other side is, we're not going to tell you what we're looking after, but if you answer so many of these questions in a certain pattern, you have these type of qualities.
Okay. And so I think one of the first ones you talked about, I think it might have been the SAT, the symptom. That's basically, is that giving an idea of how likely they are to have maybe anxiety symptoms, depressive symptoms, and those types of things?
No, we're talking about more symptoms and consequences of substance use.
Okay.
So
okay.
The effect it would have on you.
Okay. Okay. Does it give any idea as to whether or not the person has any type of maybe symptoms of depression or anxiety?
No.
No, it does not.
Okay. No.
So this is purely only just symptoms that are associated more or less with substance use.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. So let's say you give the SASE to a client, okay, maybe, you know, during like the second time you see them, and it tells you that the person has a severe alcohol problem. And let's say from your conversations you've had with a client, which hasn't been too extensive, but let's say it's been somewhat extensive, and you don't really seem to think that it's dependence. Maybe it's more or less just abuse. What happens when the assessment results differ from your gut reaction to what the client has told you? How can you maybe navigate through that process? Because I know that that has happened to me before.
And that's an interesting question, because I tell people I supervise is your gut instincts are really important. And so you wonder, okay, well, what's going on here? Why is there a disconnect between what this instrument is saying, which has been validated and all that, and what I'm thinking? So what I would do, and what I suggest to people would be, you want to say, okay, this is not clear. We're not sure what's going on here. My gut's telling me one thing, and my instruments tell me something else. So is it somewhere in between, or is it maybe the instrument is working too hard? Maybe they got nervous when they're taking the instrument. So I think you have to say is like, okay, this is a first step. This is a first step to help us understand what's going on here. And there's not a very clear step about what's going on. So we use this as a tool to help us. And you have to kind of help the client explore what's going on more. I wouldn't rely as much on the instrument at that point. I would say, okay, this could be good, but we're not sure.
Okay.
And that's the way I would kind of roll with that.
I also wonder if it would be helpful to give another instrument.
You could.
To do another assessment and maybe, or if you are going to have somebody do assessments, to maybe have them take two different ones to see, so that way you have a little bit more information.
And you could do that, and some of the instruments have been found to be like the MAST has a pretty good relationship with the SASE. And so you could use like a MAST, which is another one of those you kind of sit down and you talk about. But, you know, again, you have to use your counseling skills and how the client is presenting and what you think will work with the client. And where are they in their development on this issue? Because some people may not be ready to say, I have a substance dependence problem.
Sure.
They may be, you know, as Prochaska would say, you know, in the pre-contemplation stage.
I see. Okay. Well, and so you bring up a good point, because you say that when this happens, maybe you need to go to the client and have an honest discussion about the fact that you're getting two different messages, right?
Yeah.
So I guess I'm curious, in terms of, you know, if you were working with somebody who did take the SASE, how do you think you would go about giving client feedback? I mean, would you actually go through all the scales with them? Would you show them everything? How might you talk about it with a client?
You know, and this kind of goes back to a point, and I talk about this when I teach assessment. You know, I'm very careful about saying, okay, this assessment says this. Because, again, we're talking about one instrument out of many instruments that are out there that measure substance use. And, you know, just because, you know, other studies have said this is a pretty good instrument doesn't mean it works exactly with the client. So even before you even talk with a client, I always encourage either use multiple instruments and an interview.
Okay.
And that way what you're doing is, when you talk to somebody, you're not saying, okay, on the symptom scale, you know, you have this score, and this is what it may suggest. I would try to give it like an overview of what are the themes that have come out from not only the different instruments, but your conversation with them. And these are things that, based on these different sources, that maybe are important to look at in the counseling process.
I see. So instead of saying your score on this was this number and this may suggest that, or it may not, is to possibly take that information that you gain from, let's say, the SASE, the information you gain from the interview, information maybe from their history, you know, for example, other clinicians they've seen, and so on, and to kind of look more for patterns or themes that have emerged from that, and then present those to the client as, these are things that I've noticed. How can we address these in counseling, or how do you want to address them in counseling? Those types of questions?
Exactly, because, you know, if someone who's not familiar with the SASE says, you got a score of this on the core scale, they're not going to, that's doesn't make sense. That doesn't give them any information. It's a number that does nothing. Nothing. It doesn't help with the process. And again, you know, I view assessment as a tool. I don't think it's the end all be all, but it's a really important tool to help you advance with your client. So I think you need to, the way I view it, and I try to teach others to view it, is that it's a tool. It's a really good tool. And if used properly, you can really do a lot to help your client get better.
And I know when I've gone over the SASE, the version for adolescents with some of the adolescents I've worked with, is always presented it to them as, this isn't the truth. I'm not saying that this is your label by no means. This is just an idea. These are just a way for us to talk about this a little bit more and really to present it as, this is a possibility. It could be this way, or it might not be this way. That type of thing. And oftentimes I've gotten in some of the most honest conversations, I think, about their substance use when reviewing assessment measures with them. So.
And even the wording of the, I'm glad you brought that up, even the wording of the SASE, it doesn't say person has substance dependence problems. It says there's a high probability.
Okay.
Which, you know, I think it's a great way of phrasing it, because it's not saying there's no chance that you have it or you don't have it. There's just maybe a better chance. And I think that's unique, because you're not telling them, yes, you are substance dependent, or no, you're not substance dependent. There's a probability level.
Okay.
It's in that the probability may be for you, or you know, it may say you do or don't.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, great. Is there anything else that you wanted to add that you can think of?
I can't think of anything.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. And you know, substance abuse assessment, just working with clients who have some substance use issues, and especially now with the kind of focus on co-occurring issues, I mean, this is just a huge topic. And I know we only just really talked about a little bit of it, but I think that for counselors out there to have an idea of what kind of assessment measures out there and how that could help them is really, really useful. So I thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, thank you for having me here.
Okay.
You've just heard an interview of Dr. Andrew Burke of Adams State College by contributing editor Dr. Laura Bruneau regarding substance use assessment.
Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.